All right, Rabbi, say good morning. So today's daf is Lamed Zayin. The shir this morning is sponsored by Mrs. Rena Rotenberg in memory of her mother, Mali Rebecca Rosenbaum, Malka Rivka Bas Ezer Zichrona Livracha, Seth's grandmother. We hope that on the merit of our Talmud Torah, her neshama will have an aliyah. So we'll say, today's daf is Lamed Zayin 37. We're picking up from Lamed Vav, Amud Beis, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 11 lines up from the bottom. The Sav Rabbi Yehuda b'Kedusha Sakaima. Now, I'll say, remember again, the Gemara was talking about over here that Rabbi Yehuda, or say the Mishnah already spoke about the idea that Rabbi Yehuda holds that a Shvuya Sheniftis, a woman who was held captive and then redeemed, b'Kedusha Sakaima, ultimately again retains literally her Kedusha, which means that we assume that she was not violated in captivity. Molested, yes, but violated, no. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Yehuda really hold that. Vatanya, but we learned, Hapodes HaShvuya Yisa'ena. If someone redeems a shvuya, meaning someone goes ahead and actually pays the money to redeem a captive woman, he's permitted to redeem her. Now, he's permitted to marry her. Now, I'm saying this is talking about a coin, right? If a coin redeems a captive, he's permitted to go ahead and marry her. But if he testifies that she was not violated, then he cannot marry her. Rabbi Huda says benkachu benkach lo yisaena. Rabbi Huda says either way he cannot marry her. Now, I'm saying this price is problematic on two levels. First of all, what does it mean? What does it mean? But the point the Gemara is picking up on over here is that, what does it say? That Rabbi Yehuda says that a kohen cannot marry a shvuya, which would seem to negate because Rabbi Yehuda holds that a shvuya is automatic. We assume that she's automatically violated by her captors, which contradicts what Rabbi Yehuda said in the Mishnah. Hagufa kasha. So first of all, the Gemara says, the price doesn't make sense. Amrit hapodes ha-shvuya yisa'ena. First, you said that if you redeem a captive, you're permitted to marry her. V'hadratana meyid ba'lo yisa'ena. But then you said that if you testify about her, you may not marry her. So the Gemara says, Mishun the meyid ba'lo yisa'ena. Because you're testifying about her, you can't marry her. What does that mean? Hello, Kasha. The Gemara says, it's not a Kasha. This is what it means to say. Hapodes ha-shvuya umeyid ba. If someone goes ahead and redeems a captive woman, and he testifies about her, yisa'ena, he is permitted to marry her. Meyid ba'kidi, but if he just testifies about her, that she wasn't violated, but did not participate in her redemption, then lo yisa'ena, he is not permitted to marry her. So the Gemara says, okay, all right. Now, I'll say, that still doesn't make a lot of sense to us, but we'll put that on the side for just a moment. Mikom makom kasha Rabbi Huda. But nevertheless, still, there's an issue because this price contradicts what Rabbi Huda said in the Mishnah. So Rav Papa changes the braisa to say that really the way it's supposed to read is Rabbi Yehuda says, either way, whether he redeemed her and testified about her, or whether he just testified about her, either way, Rabbi Yehuda holds that the kohen is permitted to marry the shvuya. So the Gemara says, Rav Huna, Rabbi Yehoshua, Amar, the Olam Kiddik Tani. Rabbi Yehoshua says, no. Rav Huna, the son of Rabbi Yehoshua, says, not true. Let's leave the braisa as it was. What about the fact that it posed a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda? Listen to this. Rabbi Yehuda l'divrechem d'rabbanan kamar lehum. Rabbi Yehuda is speaking to the Rabbanan in their shita. What does he say? Lididi, Rabbi Yehuda says like this. Lididi, benkachu benkach yisa'ena. Rabbi Yehuda says, according to me, I hold that if somebody is redeeming a captive, whether he's actually redeeming her, a kohen, or whether he's just testifying that she was not violated, I hold that l'maisa, he's permitted to marry her, because Rabbi Yehuda says, my shita is that we do not need to assume that a woman was violated in captivity. Eluladidachu, benkachu benkach, lo yisa'ena mi ba'ilei. But Rabbi Yehuda says, Rabbanan, according to you, you should hold, he's telling them what their shita is, you should hold that either way he may not marry her. Because again, if you assume that Lamaisa, she was violated in captivity, then a kohen should not be able to marry her regardless, whether he's testifying about her, redeemed her. The Rabbanan, on the other hand, the rabbis will say, Hapodes ha-shvuya umeyed ba yisa'ena. The rabbis on the other hand say the following. If the kohen redeemed this woman and then testifies about her that she was not violated, he is permitted to marry her. Do you know why? Because lo shadi inish zuzi bichdei. Because a person is not going to waste their money. If the kohen is spending the money to redeem her, and then he's testifying ultimately again that she was not violated, a kohen will not waste his money redeeming a woman that ultimately he cannot go ahead and marry. Now, I'll say, now what does that mean? Pinyon Shvuyim is a mitzvah. Pinyon Shvuyim is a mitzvah no matter what. The idea is that if he's taking a personal interest in this, and then he's testifying about her, he could have donated the money. If he's taking up the cause and he's testifying about her, that's indicative of the fact that he knows that she was not violated. However, meyid ba'bichti, but to just show up in Bezin and say that she wasn't violated, where he has no skin in the game, then what? So lo yisani, he may not marry her, shema einav nasan ba. Because perhaps, again, he has his eyes on her, and therefore, again, he's just testifying because he wants to marry her. So therefore, the Braisa does not pose a contradiction to Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda's shita is still in place, namely that Rabbi Yehuda holds that we do not make the assumption that a woman is violated in captivity. Rav Papa Bar Shmuel posed the question to Rav Yosef, top of Lamed Zayin. Does Rabbi Yehuda hold that a woman who's taken captive really maintain her Kedusha, i.e. do we assume that she was not violated? But we learned, Hag Yorish Niskaira V'ra'a Saddam. So it was an interesting case. A woman converts, and she saw dam nida. Rashi says boba yom, on the actual day that she converted. So now the Gemara says Rabbi Huda Omer daya shaita. Rabbi Huda says daya shaita. We'll discuss what that means in just a moment. Rabbi Yosi Omer harihi kechol anashim ometame meis leis mepikida lepikida. Now, also listen to this. We'll actually see this in Maseches Nida, but the halacha is the following. A woman technically becomes a nida. As soon as the blood is discharged from the uterus. Of course, again, so a woman's not going to know when the blood is discharged from the uterus. What a woman knows is when the blood exits the body. So when a woman becomes a nida, i.e. blood exits the body, there's a fundamental machlokes as to whether or not we apply or we extend her status as a nida retroactively. Because do we say that even though the blood is exiting the body now, Bipashtos had exited the uterus at some time earlier, and therefore, again, she should be a nida even earlier. Now, what's the ramifications of that? The ramifications of that, we'll say, are if she touched Kodesh. Let's say she touched Truma, or she touched Karbanos. If a woman who's a nida touches these items, they become Tamei. So the Shaila is, how far back do we extend her status? So this question is compounded by the situation of a Gioris. A woman converts, then she becomes a nida on that day. So what do we do vis-a-vis her status? So Rabbosai, Daya Shaita means it's enough to declare a woman Tamei at the time that she sees the dam. That's daya shaita. That's enough right now. The other shita, which is Rabbi Yossi, says kechol hashem tam me'eis leis pekida lebekida, means that we extend her status as a nida retroactively backwards in one of two ways. Either me'eis leis means 24 hours, or pekida lebekida, the last time she did an internal examination. So what that means is we extend her status back as a nida for the shorter of those two times, for the shorter of one of those two times. So I say, now you have a Gioris who went ahead and saw Dam. Now here's the issue, Rabbi Osai. So you can't extend her status back 24 hours. Why can't you just extend it back 24 hours? She wasn't Jewish. So the most you could extend it back towards is until the tefillah, until the merger of the mikvah. So watch this. So now the Gemara says, Hagiyoshin is Karevera Asadam. So a woman goes ahead and went to the mikvah, and then she saw blood. Rabbi Huda Omer Daya Shaita. So Rabbi Huda holds that Lamaisa. We go ahead and we say that she's a nida now. We don't extend her status backwards. Rabbi Yossi Omer Hari Kechal Rashim. She's like every other Jewish woman. Omer Tame Eisleis and Bekida Lebekida. We extend it backwards. Now, both say, obviously, extending it backwards only means until the time of the actual tevila. So the Gemara says, Utsricha lahamtin gimel chadashim. And not only that, but the Gioris has to wait 3 months. Havchana, we saw this in Yevamos, has to wait 3 months prior to getting married in order to ensure that she is not pregnant from her Gentile days. These words, Rabbi Huda, Rabbi Yossi matcha the Ares Vlinase Miad. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that she can go ahead and she can get married immediately. Immediately. So the Gemara says, well, so now listen to this. Now this is a strange kind of kasha. So the Gemara is asking over here on Rabbi Huda. Now what's the kasha? Rabbi Huda said that we assume that a shavuya was not violated. Now, what, for some reason, the Gemara is assuming that Giores, according to Rabbi Yehuda, should be in the same exact category. And the same way that we assume that the Shvuya did not have relations, we should assume that what? That the Giores didn't have relations prior to converting either, and therefore, again, she shouldn't require Havchana. Like Rabbi Yossi is saying, the fact that Rabbi Yehuda says that she requires Havchana indicates that we assume that she did have relations, and if we assume that she had relations, then we should assume that what? That the Shvuya also had relations. To which the Gemara says, I don't understand. Amar le Giores Ashvuya Karamis. Why exactly are you grouping these people together? What's the Havamina of the Gemara to group them together? The Havamina is that they're grouped together in the Mishnah, right? The last two Mishnayos grouped together, Giores and Shvuya. So the Havamina is that what Rabbi Yehuda holds by one, he will apply to others. So that the Gemara says, no. Why are you going ahead and grouping Giores and Shvuya together? Giores, lo mintra nafsha. So the truth is, the Giores, before she converted, literally did not go ahead and prepare herself. Mintra nafsha means guard herself. However, shivuya mintra nafsha. And we'll say, now what does this mean, mintra nafsha? Rashi says, we'll see over here in a little bit. We'll see over here, mizamenes lamoch, uses a moch, some type of birth control, which we'll discuss. The idea over here is that before a woman converts, ultimately, again, she has a totally different lifestyle. The Shvuya is a Jewish woman the entire time. So because she's a Jewish woman the entire time, therefore, lemaisa, again, she's going to take certain precautions. So the Gemara essentially answers, you cannot compare Shvuya to Giores. Now watch this. So Gemara says, Varami Shvuya Ashvuya. Okay, so let's leave aside Giores now. We could contrast two rulings regarding Shvuya. This Sanya, because we learned, Ha Giores Vashvuya Shiniftu Finish Shiniskairu Fishinish Dakhri Yisrael Sabinos Gimel Shalom Yom Echad. So we'll say, listen to this. If you have a Giores, a woman who converted, or a woman who was held captive, or a Shifcha who was redeemed, and all of these women experienced their change in status from 3 years old and 1 day and above, which means they're both say from the age where bia is significant. What is the halacha? Tzrichos lahamtin gimel chadashim diri Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda holds that you require havchana. So what do you see from here? You see from here that Lamais Rabbi Yehuda assumes that a shivcha is violated. Because if you assume that a shivcha is not violated, why the need for havchana? Rabbi Yossi matyo li ares vili nasi miyad. On the other hand, Rabbi Yossi says that no, all of these women do not require havchana. They're permitted to get married immediately. So both sides. So now this is a kasha. This is a kasha that was raised from Rav Papa to Rav Yosef. At this point in time, ishtik, Rav Yosef was quiet. Because he didn't, meaning he did, now we'll say this is a real contradiction. Because now we have again in our Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda saying that we assume that a Shvuya is not violated. In this Braisa here, Rabbi Yehuda saying that after a woman is redeemed from captivity, she requires Havchana. She requires a 3 month waiting period before she marries. That indicates that she is violated. So what's going on? So Rav Yosef says to Rav Papa, tell me, you know, did you hear anything? Like, do you know how to reconcile this? Amar Lei, Rav Papa says, yes. Hachi Amar Rav Sheshes, Shera'u HaShenivala. Oh, what's the case of the Raisa where we require a Shvuya to have Avchan Rabbo? Say, what's the case where witnesses saw that she was violated? Okay, so obviously if witnesses see that she was violated, then Lamais, again, of course, she's going to require Avchana. So Gemara says, 1 second. Ihachi my time with Rabbi Yossi. But 1 second, if you're telling me that witnesses saw that she was violated, then how does Rabbi Yossi say that what? That she does not require any level of Avchana. Rabbi says, Kasam Rabbi Yossi, Isha Mizana Mishameshes Bemoch, that a woman who is mizana, I both say, now mizana in this context does not just have to mean znus, like immorality. What it means is a woman who is engaged in any type of immoral activity, be it willfully or unwillfully, uses a moch. Now, both say, moch, there are two different ways that moch is used in Gemara. Moch can either be used almost like a diaphragm, where it was inserted before bia, and ultimately would act as an absorbent cloth in order to absorb all of the zera, or moch was sometimes used after bia, in order to be able to collect the zera that that's inside the woman. Obviously, again, the usage of the moch the second way will be a much more ineffective form of birth control. Not that the use of the moch in the first way is totally effective either. But lemaisa, the point that Rabbi Yossi is saying is that when a woman engages in znus, she takes precautions not to become pregnant. Bishla megiores kevan de daiti legiure mintra nafsha. So I understand the giores. I was saying this is very interesting. So you know the Gemara always makes the assumption when a person converts, it's not like a spur of the moment decision. It's something they're thinking about. And even if she's engaging in immoral activity prior to when she converts, she doesn't want to compromise her ability to be a Jewess. And as such, she'll use a moch when she has relations with men in order to prevent herself from becoming pregnant. Shvuye nami delo yada hecha mematula. But it will say also, shvuye, I understand why the shvuye is going to use a moch. Why? Because it will say, even though she's in captivity now, she never knows when perhaps she'll be sold. Perhaps when her captors, Rashi says, delo yada hecha mematula, she doesn't know where they're going to bring her. Shebaim lemochra v'savra dilma mematula legabi Yisrael uparkula amintra nafsha l'shamish memoch. So the Shvuyi Rabbi Yossi also knows that one day the whole reason why people would capture women would be for the ransom. So ultimately she doesn't know who she's going to be sold to. Maybe she'll be sold back to Jews, and therefore she takes precautions not to become pregnant. Ella Shivcha Nami, to show him Pimara, a Shivcha also would also hear from her mistress that one day the mistress has in mind to emancipate her. Therefore, she'll take precautions not to become pregnant. Ella Yotze B'Shin V'Ayin Ma'ikam. Now, this is very interesting. So, what the Gemara assumes over here is that this Rabbi Yossi holds that any time a servant is emancipated and therefore becomes Jewish, there is no need for avchana. There is no need for the 3-month waiting period. So the Gemara is suggesting is like this. That logic makes sense in situations where a person sees emancipation on the horizon. But I will say there are other cases where an eved just goes out free. For example, Shein V'ayin. Master knocks out the eye or the tooth of his Eved Kanani. Remember, this is all Eved Kanani. So what happens? The Eved Kanani automatically goes free and what? Becomes a Jew. Becomes a Jew. So we'll say, so what about in that case where, again, there's no preparation yet? Even in that case, Rabbi Yossi holds that what? There is still no need for Havchana. So how do you understand that? The Chitema Kol Memelalo. Or maybe you'll say that Rabbi Yossi's case only applies to Rabbi Yossi's psak, that an eved doesn't need havchana, does not apply to a case like this, meaning any case that could occur spontaneously. Aye, but one sec, the chitay, the Gemara says that can't be true. Rabbi Yossi, hari anusa umafuta, but yet the case of where a woman is violated, or a woman is seduced, where that happens kind of spontaneously, the Tanya, yet we learned, anusa umafuta tzrichos lahantan gimel chadash in Rabbi Yehuda, yet we learned that Rabbi Yehuda holds that an anusa and a mafuta, a woman who is seduced or violated, need to wait 3 months prior to marrying in order to make sure that they're not pregnant. And yet Rabbi Yossi matir li ares v'li nase miyad, and yet Rabbi Yossi holds that a woman is permitted to go ahead and get married immediately, which Rabbi Yossi shows you what? That Rabbi Yossi holds that even in these quote-unquote spontaneous situations, she doesn't have to wait. Ela Amar Rabba, Kasar Rabbi Yossi says, Isha Mizana Misapeches, Kidei Shelo Tisaber. Rather, again, Rabba says, name Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi says Rabbi Yossi holds that a woman who engages in illicit relations afterwards mishapeches Rabbi Yossi means she turns herself upside down kadei shelo tisaber in order that she not become pregnant. In other words, Rabbi Yossi, when I say she turns herself upside down, is that she stands up. She stands up, hopefully allowing gravity to work and allowing the zera ultimately again to come out of her. So the Gemara said, therefore, Rabbi Yossi holds that even in the absence of moch, see, we'll say moch will work in any case where what? Where there's anticipation, right? Where any case where she has time for preparation, then ultimately, again, she'll use moch because she knows she doesn't want to become pregnant. But Rabbi Yossi is holding that even in cases of quote-unquote where it's spontaneous, maybe spontaneous is not the right word, but you understand what I mean. Well, I'm sorry, sudden. Okay, so there's sudden spontaneity, right, in terms of the act of relations occurring, either with her compliance or without her compliance, there is still a way for her to prevent herself from becoming pregnant by being misapechas, by turning over. The Gemara says, the idach, so I, what about the Rabbanan? So, but yet the Rabbanan hold, then all of these Rabbanan, so therefore across the board, Rabbi Yossi holds in all of these cases, as long as we know that there would be a desire on the part of the woman not to become pregnant, which we assume is the intention of all of these cases, so Rabbi Yossi will hold, she need not wait 3 months. I, what about the Rabbanan? So Rabbanan say very simply, the idach hashinan, shem lo nahapcha yafa yafa. You know, again, the Rabbanan will say, look, any of these methods are not foolproof, and any of these methods are not ironclad, and therefore, by definition, you have to be choshesh that perhaps either she, you know, she didn't turn over properly enough, or the moch wasn't used properly enough, and therefore, Rabbi Yehuda holds across the board that there is a din ultimately of havchana. Okay, so we'll say, so the Gemara goes weiter. Shene emar velo yason anoshe anesh. So we'll say, so first of all, again, just understand how we leave off still with the fundamental machlokis, Rabbi Yehuda and the Rabbanon. So Rabbi Yehuda is still of the opinion that we assume that a shvuya was not violated. Rabbi Yossi is of the opinion that we assume she was violated. The case where Rabbi Yehuda says that she requires havchana, the Gemara saying was dealing with what? Was dealing with a situation where we saw there was testimony that she was in fact violated. But in the absence of testimony, we do not assume that that occurred. Fundamental machlokis by Avchan Rabbi Yossi holds a woman always takes precautions not to become pregnant. Rabbi Yehuda doesn't disagree that she takes precautions. Rabbi Yehuda just holds that those precautions are not necessarily something we could totally rely on in order to avoid havchana. Well, so just you should know, I mean, you know this already, we do not paskin like Rabbi Yehuda. We assume that lamaisa, again, a woman is violated in captivity. The only way to avoid that assumption is in accordance with, you know, with statements that we saw earlier in the Gemara, either Eid Echad, or there's a hiding place, all the different caveats that we saw earlier in this sugya. So the Gemara goes weiter. Shneimar v'lo yason anosh yanesh. So the Mishnah said that, remember, again, if a person is chayiv misa, if a person is chayiv misa, so they don't get the punishment. Call him chayiv b'nafsho in mishali mamon. Whoever Rabbi Yossi does something that carries with it a death penalty, they get the death penalty and they are exempt from payment. From where do we know this? Because the pasuk says, "V'lo yason." If there is no loss of life, if the person is not put to death, then anoshi anesh. Then they are punished, and punishment in this context means what? Punishment means financial punishment. So we see from here that it's only in the situation of lo yason, only the situation where a person is not put to death, that's the situation in which they have to pay. But if they have to pay, excuse me, but if they're not put to death, then lemais, in that case, if they are put to death, then there is no financial penalty. So Mar says, v'ham be'ach nafka, do we learn this out from here? Be'ach nafka, we learn out from a different pasuk. What's the other pasuk? K'dei rishaso. The pasuk says, "You shall punish him in accordance with his evil." Mishum risha'achas ata mechayv v'temechayv mishteim shtei rishios. So what do we learn from here? You punish a person for one evil act, but you cannot punish a person for two, right? So therefore, we'll say, what do you see? So this pasuk is what the Gemara quoted initially. So you see, you can only be held liable for one act. Therefore, lemaisa, again, you're not going to be chayv from misa and mamon. To which the Gemara says, no. The problem over here is chadav misa v'mamon, v'chadav b'malkos v'mamon. The truth is, the psukim are talking about two different things. Rabbi Yossi, k'dei rishaso, teaches us that what? That if a person is chayiv to both misa and malkus, malkus and mamon, lashes and a financial payment, that you only get one. And the other pasuk, v'lo yason, teaches me that it's a din of misa and mamon, I only get one. Why do I need two different drashas? Utzricha, I need them. Because had the Torah just taught me that if a person incurs misa and mamon, you only get misa and you're exempt from mamon, I would have said mishum di'ika ibud neshama. Because we'll say, obviously, in this situation where life is being lost, where a person is going to be killed, that is such a chomer punishment that all you get is one punishment. But in a case where we'll say you did something that incurred liability for both malchus and mamon, look, at the end of the day, you're not getting killed. So as long as you're not getting killed, maybe you should be chayef for both. Therefore, again, the pasuk has to teach you that even by malchus and mamon, I'm only getting one of the punishments. Or perhaps I would have said that in the case of malchus and mamon, the reason I'm going to be exempt from one of them is because whatever I did, it's not so bad, right? I didn't go ahead and violate such a terrible avera. Therefore, I shouldn't get patched twice. I should only get one punishment. But if I did something that occurred for me, liability for both death and financial payment, obviously I've done something very bad. Perhaps I'm not exempt. I should get both punishments. Therefore, tzicha. Therefore, Rabbah said, we need both drushas to teach me that in the case of misan mamon and in the case of malchus mamon, I only get one punishment. And according to Rabbi Meir, who says that no, you do get malchus and pay, that if you do an act that creates or generates a liability for both malchus and mamon, you get both punishments. Tarti lamli, why don't you both these pesukim? To which Rabbi Meir will respond, chadda b'misa v'mamon. One pasuk is there to teach me that Rabbah say when there is a dual liability for misa and mamon, I only get misa. V'chad b'misa u'malchus. Oh, and the other pasuk is there to teach me that when there is a liability for misa and malchus, I also only get one of the punishments. I utzricha, and I need both drashas. Why? Tiashmo inon misa umamon mishum dechada begufe vechada bemamone lo avdinon. Because I would have said that a person does something that generates liability from misa and mamon, death and financial compensation. I would have said the only reason you get one punishment is because one is dealing with your body, and one is dealing, which is death, one is dealing with your wallet, which is money, and we don't do that. We don't punish a person both materially and physically. Lo avdinon. Ava misu makus ti idi vi idi vi gufei. When a person incurs liability for misa and malchus, that's like one long death. Perhaps I would say that you should get both. Therefore, again, the pasuk has to teach you that I do not. And if it would have just taught me that there's an exemption when I get misa and malchus, that I only get misa, not the malchus, the tarti b'gufei lo avdinin, because we don't punish a person twice physically, or we don't physically punish a person twice. Ava misa u'mamon dechada b'gufei v'chada b'mamone, ema navid be. But Rabbah say, when it comes to misa and mamon, where one is affecting my body, one is affecting my guf, perhaps, again, I would say that we do give such punishments, therefore it's v'icha. So I'll say, therefore it turns out that l'maisa, we need both drushas. Either according to the first step, I need both drushas, one to teach me the case of misa and malchus, and one to teach me, misa and mamon, and the other teach me the case of mamon and malchus, and according to Rimeir, to teach me the case of misa and mamon, and mamon and malchus. Now, once we started dashing psukim, the Gemara brings up a couple of more psukim. Now, the pasuk says that if somebody kills someone, if somebody murders someone, you may not go ahead and allow them to atone for their act with financial compensation. Right, so which means that what Rabbah say, that if someone did something bad, murder, they're executed, and they can't go ahead and make atonement through money. So as I said, now why do I need this? Because remember, again, I already know this. Once you've already established that when a person generates a liability for misa and mamon, so they're exempt from the mamon because they have misa, that by definition tells you that I cannot go ahead and take care of my liability when I murdered someone through financial compensation. So why do I need this pasuk? To which the Gemara says, "Amar Rachmana lo sishka mamon aminei v'siftei mikatla," because the pasuk is teaching me, don't take money from the murderer and exempt him from execution. That's what the Torah is coming to teach me. So why do I need the pasuk to teach? Why do I need the pasuk that says, do not go ahead and take atonement payment and take that in lieu of him fleeing to the city of refuge? So this is by the person who kills b'shogeg. So the Torah is telling me a person kills b'shogeg, the halacha is they have to go to the Miklat. So let's say a person says, look, you know what? Here's the deal. I'm going to cut you a big fat check, right? I'll give it to the yeshiva, I'll give it to the shul, I'll give it to whatever, and let's go to the Beis Din, and let's go ahead and let's make that in lieu of me going to Golos. So the Gemara says, you can't do that. Lamali, why do I need this pasuk? The Amar Achmana, lo sishka mamoni minei v'siftrei min Golos, because Torah is teaching me, do not take money from him in order to exempt it from Golos. Also, in other words, what the Torah is teaching me over here is in these cases, I cannot, now, also, now remember, I want to be clear on something. This is not saying like I'm bribing my way. It's not bribery. What this is saying is I'm trying to go ahead and do financial compensation. The idea is when I kill someone, I will say there is the taking of life, but there's also a financial reality, right? I've deprived that person's family of livelihood. So what I'm saying is, instead of execution or instead of golos, allow me to make up financially for what I have done. So the Torah says you don't have the right to do that. If I did it, if I murdered intentionally, chas v'shalom, there's death. If I killed unintentionally, there's gullus, and I cannot go ahead and make up for that financially. So the Gemara says, "Otrei kray lamali." Why don't you both of these pesukim? To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you why. Chad b'shogeg v'chad meis. Talking about two different cases. One is talking about where I killed accidentally. One is talking about where I killed intentionally. Utsrichi, and I need both of these pesukim. Why? Diashmo inon meizid mishum duchamari surei. Because I would have thought the Torah would have just told me that I can't financially compensate. If I kill someone intentionally, I can't make up for that financially. I understand that because the act is very severe. Aval shogeg d'lochamei isurei. But if I only killed someone accidentally, Rabbosa, which of course again is not as severe as killing them intentionally, perhaps I might have thought that what? That I can make up for that financially. Amalo. Perhaps I'm not just condemned to godless, but I have the option to make a financial payment. Or again, Rabbosa, and perhaps in the case of shogeg, where I myself am not executed. Excuse me. Thank you. Where I myself am not executed, so I might have thought in that case, where there's no din of execution on me, just galus, perhaps in that case, I should have the ability to make financial compensation and avoid galus. Ava mezid deika ibo neshama emalo. But mezid where what? Mezid where lemaisa, again, there is a din of execution on me. Of course, in that case, I cannot make financial compensation and be exempted from execution. Therefore, tzvicha. So I'll say, therefore, both cases are needed. Torah teaches me, both in the case of mezid and in the case of shogeg, that there is no option for financial compensation in lieu of either execution or galos, but rather, again, execution or galos are the only punishments, and there is no din of financial compensation. V'la aretz. V'la aretz lo yichupar. Remember what I said. L'adam asher shafach ba. Remember the pasuk says over here asher shupach ba. The land will not atone for the blood that was spilled in it. Ki im v'dam shavcho. Except with the blood of the murderer. So we'll say, what is the Torah teaching me? Torah is teaching me, since he's teaching me, that l'maisa, when someone has murdered someone else, so the only form of atonement is how? That the murderer himself be killed, the murderer himself be executed. Which I will say, the mashma'os of that is that there is no financial compensation option for the murderer. That he cannot go ahead and say, I'll pay X, and that will exempt me from the din of Misa. So what is the pasuk teaching me? Lamali. Now remember, if that's all the pasuk's teaching me, that can't be it. Why? Because we've learned that already. Right, you've already learned that out from the previous pesukim. So what is this pasuk coming to contribute? This is actually very interesting. It's coming to teach in the Chiddush Sanya, in accordance with the following braisa. So also listen to this. Minayin shem nis arfa egla, v'achar kach nimtza horeg. Where do I know? Also remember, the process of egla rufa is you find a person murdered in between two cities, and you don't know who murdered him. So what do? So you measure the distance from the body to the closest city. The elders of the closest city come out, and they do this whole process of egla rufa. They decapitate the calf, and that's a form of kapara for the residents of the city. So how do I know? Shem nis'arfa egla. Let's say they did the whole process of egla rufa. That's a very interesting case. Now remember, the whole process of egla arufa is where we don't know who murdered this individual. We don't know who did it. How do I know? Let's say the following case. So now let's say we did the egla arufa in city A, and then after we did the egla arufa, the identity of the murderer is discovered. We suddenly now know who the murderer is. So how do I know that after we did the egla arufa in Achran and Sohoreg, Minayin Shein Pochno, says, I might have thought like this. I might have thought that, look, after we did the egla arufa already, then what? Then perhaps the guy's off the hook, meaning we already did, so to speak, the atonement process for the death of this individual. But the Gemara says, how do I know that even after the egla arufa, we find the murderer, that he's not patur, that we execute him? Shene'emar, ula aretz lo yuchupar ladam asher shufach ba. Because the pasuk says, the land shall not be atoned for the blood that was spilled in it, ki im bidam shofcho, except with the blood of the murderer. So we'll say, see from here, that even after process of egla rufa, if you find the murderer, you still execute him. Va'ata teva'er hadam hanoki mikirbecha, and you shall go ahead and literally, tiva'er means literally get rid of the dam hanoki, the pure blood from within your midst. Why do I need this? And I will say that what this is talking about is what does this pasuk come to teach me? And I will say that even the verbiage of this pasuk is a little bit strange. You shall expunge or you shall rid yourself of the dam hanoki mikirbecha. So what does this mean? So the Gemara says, we need this pasuk because it comes to teach me the following halacha. Rabbi say, how do we know that if a person has a din, his person is going to be executed by the sword? How do we know that we give them the sword to the neck? Right? Rabbi say, in other words, there are many ways you could kill a person with a sword. You could stick it in their heart. You could stick it in their stomach. Ultimately, they'll die. So again, how do I know that I literally do it by the throat from the neck? Talmud Lomar, Va'ater Tevaer Hadam Hanoki Mikirbecha. The pasuk says, you shall go ahead and expunge all of the Dam Hanoki from within your midst. Hukshu Kol Shovchi Domim Le'egla Arufa. So, Bosai, remember, it's the same verbiage here as we have by Egla Arufa, to create a linkage. What's the linkage? Ma Lahalon Minat Savar, just like Egla Arufa, the egla is decapitated by the neck. So we'll say, so too, if you execute a person with saif, with the sword, he gets a sword to the neck. Even the Gemara says, well, one second, if that's the case, imai lahalan bekofitz umimul oref, afkan bekofitz umimul oref. So if that's the case, just like you take a cleaver, kofitz is literally a cleaver or a saw, to the, and you do it to the back of the neck of the animal, of the egla, so perhaps I should do the same thing by misa also with a cleaver, to the back of the neck. Listen to this. This is amazing. Now the pasuk says, you shall love your brother like you love your friend like you love yourself. Bar lo misa yafa. What that teaches us is that lemaisa, you have to choose for him the best death possible. Best death possible means the quickest death possible. You could take the sword, you could take the cleaver to the back of the neck, but that is not as quick of a death as a death to the throat, a death to the front. Therefore, V'hatrecha Kamocha says that Lamaisa, you have to kill him as quickly as possible. Kol cherem asher yechara min ha'adam lo yipad. Rabbi Tosas also just points out that bar lo misa yafeh is also that we know that dafka, you kill him, you take the saif by the neck as opposed to the saif by the heart. Because a saif by the neck will result, again, in the fastest death possible. And again, it's just interesting that that's learned out from V'hatrecha re'acha Kamocha, that even if you have to do something, which is a very important idea, that even if you have to do something that's going to hurt someone else, you have to make sure to blunt the effects of the blow as much as possible, whether that's physical or whether that's emotional as well. Very important, yisod. So the Gemara goes weiter. So remember, that this is actually very interesting as well. Literally translated, kocherem. Now, take a look at Rashi for just a moment. Rashi says, kocherem, mashma lashon chayve misos. Now, the way the Gemara is understanding this pasuk is that if a cherem means death, so if a person is kol cherem sheyirachem in adam, which the Gemara is understanding to mean now, anytime you have to put a person to death, lo yipadeh, he shall not be redeemed. Now the Gemara says lamali. Now why do I need this pasuk? Because supposed to say at first glance, what does the pasuk seem to be saying? That if a person is liable to death, he cannot be redeemed, i.e., he cannot offer financial compensation in lieu of execution. Now, if that's what the pasuk is teaching me, why do I need that? We already learned that. We know that lamali. To which the Gemara says, I'll tell you what, mi boile l'chidisanyo. You need it in accordance with the following braisa. Minayin liyotze lihare. How do I know that if a person is being led out to death, the Amar Echad Erko Alai, and a person, so you can imagine this, Ruvain's being led out to be executed, and Shimon says, I pledge Reuven's value to the Beis HaMikdash. Minayin shlo amar klum. How do I know that such a statement is meaningless? Shene'emar kol cher meshayecha ramina adam lo yipadeh. To teach me that what? That lemaisa, at time that a person is condemned to death, lo yipadeh, they shall not be redeemed, which means what? The person has no value. Person who is condemned to die is considered to be valueless, and therefore the maisa, if you go ahead and you say, I'm pledging his life to the Beis HaMikdash, such a statement is meaningless. Yochol af kodim shenig mardino, I might have thought that this is true even before his gemardin, even before his sentencing has taken place. Talmud lomar min ha'adam velo kol ha'adam. Therefore the pasuk says, min ha'adam, from certain people, but not all people. In other words, Rabosai, that this din that he becomes valueless only applies when? After the gemar din. But before the gemar din, he has his regular erech, his regular value. Ul Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya de Amar, ne'erach, b'pnei shadam av k'tsuvin, hay kol chirem ha'avile. Rabosai, according to Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, who says, that even a person who has been condemned to death still has a value, because you also remember the value that we have is set by the Torah, right? A man between ages so-and-so and so-and-so is worth X, and one between ages so-and-so and so-and-so is worth Y. So Rabbi Hanan Yemen Akavi says that even a person who is condemned to die, the Gemara didn't already happen, still has a value. So according to him, what does the Pasuk come to teach me? So the Mibay Leilichid is saying, he leaves me for the following, Rabbi Shobin Osho, Rabbi Yochanan Ben Baroka Omer, Rabbi Yochanan, the son of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Baroka says, I would have thought like this, that those who are put to death, b'dei shamayim, in other words, Rabbosai, a person does something that carries with it a penalty of kares. Rashi says, lemumsin, or misi b'dei shamayim, lemumsin b'dei shamayim, what's an example? Kegon misha harag shoro es hanefesh, tichsiv bei, yumas, velo misas bezin. So Rabbosai, listen to this. For example, let's say my shor, my ox, kills someone else. I cannot be put to death in a human court for such an act like that. But I am absolutely held responsible b'dei shamayim. Now, so what does that mean? I know that in a case where I am held liable at the hands of heaven, shenosnin mamon umiskaper lohem. The Rebbe says, what's the halacha? If you have heavenly liability, right, celestial liability, so how do you deal with that? If you pay money, you are exempt from that liability. Shenemar im kofer yushas alav. Yachol af bide adam kain. I might have thought that this should apply even when Rabbosai, when I am liable at the hands of a human court, that even if I am sentenced to death, perhaps I should have the ability to go ahead and give financial compensation. Talmud lomar chayrim mina adam lo yipadeh. Therefore, the pasuk says, if you are liable to death at the hands of the court, the pasuk teaches me that what lo yipadeh, there is no redemption. I.e., I cannot go ahead and buy my way out of it. But Rabbosai, I only know that this applies to what we call misa chamuros. So Rabbosai, misa chamuros are situations where if you do them accidentally, there's no kapara. If you look at Rashi, Rashi says, kevan dekra lo parish komisos mistayech ishadis ha-chamura de'in mamono matzila amisos chamuros umayniyu kegon ha-osech chabura ba'aviv agonev nefesh bistral shein kapara kesuva b'shigagas or shein karis b'zidonon d'lechayiv chadas shigagas. Rabbosai, listen to this. So misos chamuros means situations where the misa is chamor, and that if I did it unintentionally, there is no spelled out kapara. So for example, Rashi gives the example over here of where I go ahead and I hit my father. If chas v'shalom, I hit my father, so if I do that intentionally, the din is misa. But yet, the Torah doesn't spell out what the punishment is b'shogeg. So apparently, there is no scripted shogeg punishment, which indicates that that's called a misa chamura shlo nitna shigagasan l'chapara. So I only know that this applies to misas chamuros. Misos kalosh nitna shigagasan l'chapara minayin. But Rabbosai, I might have thought that in the case of what we'll call a misa kala also means a lower level prohibition. Now, what's the sign of a lower level prohibition? A lower level prohibition is a prohibition where the Torah spells out what the punishment is if I did it b'shogeg. So Rabbi says, so misa chamura is a misa so chamur that the Torah tells you what the punishment is that if I did it intentionally, but doesn't spell out what the punishment is if I did it unintentionally. Misa kala is that their punishment is spelled out even if I did it unintentionally. So I only know that I, bless you, that I can't buy my way out of a misa chamura. How do I know that I can't buy my way out even of a misa kala? Talmud lomar, kol cherem. Therefore, the pasuk says, any time that you are liable to death, whether it is because of what we call a misa chamura or because of a misa kala, either way, halacha lemaisa, wherever there is a din of misa, I do not have the ability or the right to buy myself out with financial compensation. We'll say, we'll stop over here. We're not finished. We'll pick up with the sugya tomorrow, Mirat Hashem.